Open our eyes, Lord, that we might see. Open our ears that we might hear. Open our mind and our heart that we might understand, so that we will turn to you and live.
And more importantly, they were the enemies of Israel. So Jonah had no interest, zero, in taking a message from God to the enemies of Israel. And so he flees. And verse 2 of chapter 1 doesn't say that he ran away from Nineveh, although he did. It says he ran away from God. So continuing on, if you know the story of Jonah, you know that God orchestrated certain events in Jonah's life to kind of align him with God's missional purpose. And those events involved a ship, a storm, a shipwreck, a big fish. I'm sorry we can't go into detail on all of that, but the upshot is that at the end of a God-designed, harrowing week, Jonah is unsurprisingly ready to obey God and go to Nineveh. But then we see that his obedience was an outward obedience, and inwardly his heart was unchanged. And it makes me think of you and me when we might find ourselves doing the right thing on the outside, and inwardly we're resentful that we even have to. So Jonah's obedience looks like this. It's a big city. He walks just a little way in, and he preaches what is, in the Hebrew language, literally a five-word sermon. Doesn't mention God. Doesn't mention repentance. Probably not the way they taught him in seminary. And then he's done. He's out. He did what he was asked to do. But then an amazing thing happens. And chapter 3 tells us that everyone in Nineveh, from the king on down, believes God and repents. That's the work of the Spirit right there. And Jonah got to be a part of it. So our actual passage, our reading actually picks up here, in verse 10 of chapter 3. When God saw the Ninevites repenting, he had mercy and didn't bring upon them the destruction he had threatened. And now Jonah's response that we heard Providence read earlier. But Jonah was greatly displeased and became angry. Remember back in Matthew 20:15, am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or are you envious because I'm generous? So Jonah's angry, and he prays an angry prayer. Oh Lord, is this not what I said while I was still back home? That's why I was so quick to flee in the other direction. I knew that you're a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger and abounding in love, a God who relents from sending calamity. Does that sound familiar? Jonah is preaching, he's quoting, I should say, Exodus 38:6, which is what God said about himself to Moses in front of the burning bush. But now Jonah's praying it back to God in a very different spirit. And he says, first of all, God, you are the problem. Secondly, this is what I don't like about you. You're gracious, compassionate, slow to anger, abounding in love, a God who relents from sending calamity. That's why I didn't want to be on the team in the first place. I knew you would pull something like this. I think when I was little and we learned the story of Jonah, I understood it that Jonah was afraid to go to Nineveh. He knew how mean they were. And so obviously he had a concern about going among his very mean enemies. And that's reasonable. But what I think Jonah just told us is that he didn't want to go to Nineveh because he knew what God was like. And he had a hunch that God might do something merciful. Isn't that fascinating? Our hearts, you guys. So Jonah's mad, and now we see God come to Jonah, and he asks him a question. Jonah, is it right for you to be angry? And notice that he asks him a justice question. Justice and mercy are always in a balance. It's not one or the other. Both are attributes of God. But Jonah has no appetite for mercy. So God asks him a justice question. Is it right for you to be angry? And Jonah replies by storming out of town. Chapter 4 tells us that he goes east of the city. And east is biblical code for away from God. When Adam and Eve fell, they were sent east of Eden. When Cain killed his brother Abel in the book of Genesis, he was sent further east. So Jonah goes east and he sits down, and verse 5 tells us he watches the city of Nineveh, hoping to see its destruction. He's still hoping that God will somehow play that justice card and that mercy won't happen for his enemies. So Jonah's stuck, just like you and I get stuck, just like we heard last week when there are things that we can't let go. And he sits there angry, watching the city, hoping for its destruction. So now we're going to see God come to Jonah again. And I don't know what you think Jonah needs or deserves at this point. For me, I think the phrase kick in the pants comes to mind. But instead, God sees this guy who's stuck. He sees someone who, I don't believe he looks at him and says, this is a guy who's just doing everything wrong on purpose. This is someone who's, quote, living in sin. I think he sees someone who can't let go. Someone who is a struggler. And I don't know about you, but I feel really encouraged by the story of a struggler. Have you ever sat in church and looked around at everybody who had it together and thought, I am the only person in this room struggling? If that's you this morning, I have some really great news for you. My friend, you are in a room full of strugglers. It's all of us. Not all the time. We take turns, right? But that we have in common. That's what we bring to each other. And that's what God sees in us, is a struggler, just like he saw it in Jonah. So God asks Jonah another question. Well, first of all, he shows him some mercy. Jonah himself, he sees that he's got a problem with mercy. And as we heard this morning, God addresses this by, he sends a leafy plant that grows up over his head to provide some shade. Where Jonah's sitting is very hot. This is a part of the world that includes present-day Iraq. It's a hot place to sit and be mad. And God shows him mercy in a small act of kindness just to relieve his physical discomfort. And that's what happens. But if you know the next scene, that night, God sends a worm whose job is to chew the plant. It wilts and there's no more shade. And Jonah's back to angry. And he says, I would rather die than live. Think about that the next time you say, I'm so hot, I could die. I avoid Jonah. So God asks him another question. Jonah, is it right for you to be angry about the plant? And notice it's another justice question. Jonah still doesn't have the hang of mercy. And Jonah says, yes, angry enough to die. But the Lord said, you've been concerned about this plant. Though you didn't tend it or make it grow, it sprang up overnight and it died overnight. But Nineveh has more than 120,000 people who cannot tell their right hand from their left. Should I not be concerned about that great city? Matthew 20:15 again. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or are you envious because I'm generous? And this is actually where Jonah's story ends. We don't know if he ever came around. He's only mentioned one other time in the entire Old Testament, his lifetime. And that time did not put him in a good light. But what we do know is that Jonah's stuckness and his problem with mercy and what he couldn't let go of or get past was not an obstacle or a barrier for God in showing him mercy. What did Jonah do to deserve it? Same thing you and I do. Nothing. It's freely given or it's not mercy. But that didn't slow God down in showing mercy to his stubborn, mule-headed, angry prophet. At this point, who's converted? The Assyrians. And who isn't? God's man. No obstacle for God. And whatever my thing is, and whatever your thing is, it is no obstacle for God. He's not shocked by it, and it's not going to hold him back from showing you mercy. We're always going to be invited into that, just like we saw Jonah be invited into that. One of the great mercy verses in the Bible is Ephesians 2:4. And it says that God is rich in mercy. That phrase, rich in mercy. I want it to really sink in. Rich, having more than will ever be required. And God's the only one that we can say that about. You and I can be merciful, but are we ever going to have a supply of mercy or anything else that's above and beyond what will ever be required? Rich in mercy. So let's think about that together. That means that on your worst day, in your worst week, rich in mercy. And when you look in the mirror, and maybe you can't accept what you see, or maybe you just so dislike what you know is on the inside, rich in mercy. Please say it with me. Rich in mercy. And when you're so angry and we can't let it go, we cannot forgive. With me. Rich in mercy. You got the hang of it. I knew you could. I warned my husband up front, when I say, then you say. But not until I say. Or maybe we've been hurt along the way by the church. Or maybe disappointed by the very people who were supposed to be showing us Christ. Rich in mercy. Maybe we have some big doubts and questions about God himself, and we think we're the only ones who do. Rich in mercy. And when we feel nothing at all, rich in mercy. So what about us? Are we letting the Spirit develop in us that spiritual instinct to be quick and generous, to show mercy to each other, to show mercy to ourselves, which can be harder, and we don't deserve it? And sometimes the thing that can be hardest to let go of is that idea that we shouldn't be receiving what we didn't earn and we don't deserve. If you're a parent, I know you have rules at your house, but are you showing enough mercy to your children? I'll let that one sink in for a minute. So to wrap it all up, Micah 7:18 says that God delights in showing mercy. He delights in showing mercy. God, what do you get a kick out of? I delight in showing mercy.
The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace.